one phrase, guaranteed to wind Ed Drew up when he had the misfortune to be a ministry apprentice at Christchurch Balham, was the phrase, "Ed, there's no point in having a dog and barking yourself." And so somewhat inevitably, it was a phrase I used on more than one occasion to remind him that he would be doing something that I would no longer be doing. Delegation was something that I delighted in because it allowed me to give away jobs that I didn't really want to do. And I justified that to Ed by explaining to him that at that moment in time, he was lower down the ministry food chain than I was, and therefore he'd just have to lump it. Now, as you might imagine, that had repercussions for motivation. And it falls into the category of what I think Matt Perman describes in his book, What's Best Next, as go for delegation rather than stewardship delegation, something to which we'll return in due course. But I understood the value of getting rid of stuff, but it tended to be the stuff I didn't want to do anyway. And I think partly my reason for that was because my principal model for leadership had been the Royal Navy. You know, it's military, it's hierarchical, it's you just do what you're told, you know, to those that are lower down. So that became, in one sense, the shape of things for a while. I've been helped recently by a number of articles and different books. I might reference those in due course, but we are talking about the subject of delegation, a verb that means to entrust a task or responsibility to another person, typically to one who is less senior than oneself. So we are going to be thinking about that issue of giving stuff away, giving ministry and perhaps especially responsibility away. And it's going to be, we hope, more than simply talking about the heavy lifting. But here are a couple of opening questions I'd like you to think about. Firstly, why do you think you need to delegate? Why? And secondly, what makes it hard for you to delegate? So I'll stick into groups and you can go into breakout rooms and sort that one out and we'll see how you get on. Okay, great stuff. I think you're all back.
Good delegation of that discussion, Perks.
Thank you very much. Now, look, the illustration of the dog barking was unquestionably irritating to Ed, but it does make a good point. In other words, there is no point in having a dog and barking yourself. But most leaders struggle with delegation, and we'll get to the reasons in due course. We'll perhaps think about yours and see how those align. But the role of leader requires us to get good at delegation. Our team and the teams that we run actually need us to fulfill our role as a team leader and not as a team member. And so our input needs to complement theirs, not compete with theirs. The job of a leader is to mobilize and multiply the people for whom we're responsible. And we can't do that if our heads are down in all the work that needs to be done. We actually need to hand off things to other people who can pick up the ball and run with it themselves. And our role then is to coach them, provide feedback, review, revisit what they've done, develop them, so that they can perform as well as they can with either the task or the responsibility that we've given to them. Here's a couple of things that might be helpful. You'll be familiar with this, I'm sure. I think I've used this with you before, an Eisenhower matrix. It's simply to work out what you ought to do with what you've got in front of you. It draws a distinction between urgent and important issues. Issues that are low importance and low urgency, you can just ditch. Issues that are highly important, but not massively urgent, you can defer and diarise. Issues that are really important and really urgent, you've just got to do now. Drop everything, do it now. But issues that are low in terms of their importance for you and high in their urgency, delegate. Now, there's something in that, but I think the problem with that is it somewhat denigrates what we delegate. So it's not just getting stuff off our desk. I think that that ought to shape what we delegate, but we'll come to that in due course. This is another thing that's quite helpful. This comes from that book, Getting Things Done. Stuff comes to you. Important question, who's it for? Is it for me? Is it for others? If it's for others, get rid of it. If it's for me, what do I do next? If it's going to take less than 2 minutes, just get it out of the way. Just get it done. Bang. Get it done. Doosh. If it's going to take time, we've got some options. Schedule it, diarize. Choose to say no thanks. You know, no, actually don't do it, or delegate it. Again, that kind of stuff, I think we kind of operate with automatically, but I think it's quite helpful to see the stark options in front of us and realize actually we don't have to do the same thing with everything that comes to us. We can do different things with different stuff that comes to us. And it's just important we put it in the right box, because that'll explain what we're doing and why we're doing it. Here are five reasons why delegation is difficult. We are going to work our way through each one of them. Here are five reasons why we find delegation difficult. The things we need to give away were the things that got us into leadership. The things we need to give away are the things that we really enjoy. Thirdly, the things we need to give away are the things that we do less, that others, sorry, will do less well. The things we need to give away would be done quicker if we still did them. And fifthly, the things we need to give away are the things we get praised for. Now, these are the things, therefore, that make it difficult for us to delegate. And it's just worth spending a couple of moments on each of those. We won't spend very long. But the things we need to give away were the things that got us into leadership. In other words, it's probably that we proved to be proficient in a number of things. And people thought, oh, I tell you what, why don't we entrust him with some leadership? They were the things that got us noticed. We were good at preaching, Bible handling, perhaps running a course, speaking up front, running a team. And those were the things that, because we were proficient in them, others thought, tell you what, let's get him, you know, actually ministry trainee, assistant leader, church planter. And so the things that got us to where we are now are the things that we need to give away. But they're the reason we got where we got to, and therefore we're emotionally attached to them. They contributed to where we are now, and we don't want to give those things up. Secondly, the things we need to give away are the things that we really enjoy. The odds are we're enjoying doing what we're doing. We like doing the things that we're good at, and we struggle to give them away. And it's not just that we're good at them. It's not just that they got us to where they are now. It's that we love them and we really don't want to not do them. Now, the truth is, I think there are some things you just don't want to give up. And there's some things we shouldn't give up. But there are also some things that we perhaps don't want to give up. In other words, if there are some things that we love about ministry, we enjoy about ministry, and it fills our tank, great. But we just need to be careful. If we're going to give our time to leading our team, that is accomplishing things through them, not accomplishing things ourselves, what we may need to do is not do stuff. For example, it may well be that actually you need to stop running a small group yourself in order to run a small group full of your small group leaders so that they become more proficient in what they're doing. You might love doing a small group, you might be brilliant at doing it, but actually for you to, because you haven't got time, the one thing you might need to do is actually use that time instead to train them. In other words, you're exercising your ministry through them. It's just a different structure. I think we could debate that because I think we want to be instinctively nervous about things that take us away from the coalface, but it's just certainly worth thinking about. Where are we? Thirdly. There we go. The things that we need to give away are the things that others will do less well. The things we do now are the things that got us to where we are, and things that we love and things that we're good at, and we give them away and others do them badly, and that really irritates. It chafes. It's frustrating. It's particularly bothersome if we have a high bar of expertise, of proficiency. And if we think, if there's a high bar in our context of excellence, it's going to be kind of, So for example, I would imagine Matt Fuller will find it far, far harder to give away preaching opportunities than I do, because I think there is a lower expectation of excellence in preaching in a much smaller congregation with cultural breadth than there is at a professional congregation that is large, which is what CCM is. And we will find it hard to give things away to people who will do it less well than us. Now, I think there's a debate to be had about, you know, at what point do we get them on board? But unless we can develop the bandwidth to cope with people doing things badly, the dangerous will always step in, prick up the reins and start doing it once again. And we need to recognise, no, we are not the practitioner, we're the trainer. They're the practitioners, they're the team members doing whatever. Our job now is to help them, to coach them, to encourage them, to advise them. It is to help them become as good as we consider ourselves to be, or in fact, to help them to become more proficient than we ever were. Fourthly, the things we need to give up would be done quicker if we still did them. I mean, it's just true, isn't it? I mean, you've got to a certain point of proficiency, you can do it quickly and easily, and you can just bang, bang, bang. And so oftentimes it's just easier for to do things yourself. But that is a short-term view. In 6 months' time, the odds are, with experience, with feedback, with some training, those people to whom we've entrusted either a task or responsibility will be as good, if not better than us. And so we need to, instead of diving in and doing it, we're going to have to accept it's short-term pain for long-term gain. But the truth is, at that moment, it would be simpler, it would be quicker if you still did them. But we need to avoid that. Fifthly, the things we need to give away are the things that we get praised for. And I think what we're talking about here is an ego issue. So if we have an ego, if we like praise, if part of why we're doing ministry is we like the acceptance and the applause, metaphorical, of course, that comes with it, we will struggle to give stuff away. And I think we just need to be open and honest about this and own it. The things that we did and that we were good at, we got praised for and we liked it. And that's okay. But then, of course, we have to give them away, which means we won't get the praise, which also is okay. But then what really grates is when others get praised for doing something less well than we thought we were doing it. And that becomes a bit of an issue. Except, of course, it shouldn't be. But we do just need to own it. Because it unless we can get over this, we're not going to give stuff away and we will stop the multiplication of ministry that we're after. Okay, let me stop there at that point and say, did you have any additional reasons that you'd want to add to those for why delegation is difficult?
It's not an additional one.
Yeah, go for it.
We did have some different ones, but sort of a higher level observation. Just hearing you talk about those things, it sort of strikes me that if in our leadership we are genuinely about servant leadership, we'll find these things a lot easier than we would otherwise. You know, I think that last one particularly felt like that feels quite pointy. Why is that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's actually because I'm in it for myself.
Yeah. Look, and it is true. It is true. And I think one of my observations would be, if you are an insecure person, don't go into ministry. Or rather, the degree to which you're insecure in ministry will affect your effectiveness in ministry. It actually makes you self-concerned, and it means you won't do ministry through others, which will actually limit the engine for growth. And we need to be the kind of people that, in one sense, delight in seeing others getting credit for doing stuff less well than we might have done it, and just delight in the fact that ministry is being done. But insecure people are difficult people to work for. Happy to move on? How are we doing time-wise?
I think,
go for it.
I think context is key. Context is what you've said, so in our context, most of our core team are young, professional, educated people. But also, you know, that just East Asian, South Asian culture is you get educated, professional people. And so we've had to go for quality ministry rather than, you know, compromising on that. So we're small, but there needs to be that. And also the fact that, you know, well, yeah, I can actually jump on the central line and in 20 minutes I'll be at St. Helens, or get into my car, drive 7 miles and I'll be at an evangelical church. So actually, if we want to hold people, all I'm saying is context is key in what you delegate and what you don't.
Yeah, I think that's helpful. And I think, context is key. And I think you've got to recognize the danger is you mustn't get into the territory where you start thinking you've got to compete with them. In other words, the bar on competency in, for example, preaching or quality of ministry just has to be sufficiently high that people won't go. You know, it doesn't need to be St. Helens high, you know, because you'll never get there. So in other words, keep it low, but also you need to accentuate the things that make you guys distinctive in terms of what you're trying to do. In other words, there will be things that you're doing excellently that St. Helens can't do. Namely, for example, the provision of local community life. And don't shy away from talking about the excellency of relational interaction as opposed to the excellence of gospel ministry, you know, of preaching. Both those two things are hugely significant, but we tend to talk about one more than the other, because we, you know, disproportionately value the sermon over and above other legitimate aspects of church life. Let's move on. Let's have a look at this. Six reasons why delegation matters. So these are the six reasons to stop barking ourselves. Number one, it restricts the gospel ministry output of the team. It limits the opportunity to train your team. It undermines the enthusiasm of your team. It promotes bitterness amongst your team. It hinders the creativity of your team, and it ruptures trust between you and your team. Let me go through those in turn and just say this. Look, it really matters. If we don't delegate, then rather obviously what your team is able to do in terms of gospel ministry is limited. If you hold on to everything and will not give things away, the gospel ministry engine is limited by your capacity. The more you're willing to give both tasks and responsibility away, the more you're going to be able to get done. Less gets done if we don't delegate. More will be done, perhaps at a lesser level, but more will be done. You know, more times less is more than just you, if I can put it in those terms. So one of the reasons for having a team, of course, is that the gospel ministry gets multiplied. And that won't happen if we don't handle it on. So we must stop barking ourselves and get others to do it. Secondly, it limits the opportunities to train your team. On-the-job training is the single most effective way of actually learning how to grow in something and develop competency. Actually doing it, getting it wrong, getting some feedback, thinking about it, having another crack at it, that is the best way to learn. It's kind of hands-on experience. So, for example, I'm useless at tinkering with my gears on the rear of my back, rear derailleur. I just get confused. I can watch YouTube videos. I can watch Tim, my mechanic, do stuff. But actually what I need to do, I need to get there and realize, okay, so if righty-tighty, all right, what's that doing? Oh, that's moving that. So that means that actually it's going to find it easy. That will remove the, okay, so it's on the job stuff that is where it really happens. And if you don't give away things, it's limiting the opportunities for your team to get experience of ministry, making mistakes, learning from them and doing it better. Thirdly, it undermines the enthusiasm of your team. When you delegate a responsibility to someone and then step back in and take it back because you think it's being done badly, that is a powerfully demoralizing experience. If we do that repeatedly, what we're doing is we're reinforcing the message that there is no point in them investing in something because the odds are it's just going to be taken away soon. What it does, it communicates to the team is, I don't think you're good enough. I don't think you're capable. That is discouraging and it's demoralizing. And it slowly eats away things, which means that you end up promoting bitterness amongst your team. They just get fed up. And I have to say, I've made this mistake, and I'm reflecting on some recent ministry calls and just wondering whether I've been unwittingly guilty of this. And so what you end up with is a kind of a resentment, because you become the arbiter of all that is good. You step in, you decide it's not good enough, you take it away, you get someone else to do it, and they're just thinking they're underskilled. You've undermined them in the view of others, and that is difficult. I think it does raise some important questions about competency beforehand. I think we want to try to err on the side of risk, but I think I'm risk averse in this area of giving stuff away, because I'm acutely aware that this might result if actually people aren't developing. They aren't making the progress you want. They keep making those mistakes. But I think if we're prepared to give time to people and coach them, people will make more progress than perhaps we're expecting. But we need to be aware that if we don't delegate well, it will promote bitterness amongst our team. It, of course, hinders the creativity of our team. Just a couple more and then I'll stop. If the team knows that you're going to take ownership of a project back if it's not done your way, then really all we're training our team to do is never innovate or try to improve on something. We are training them to be gophers. This is the kind of the gopher stuff. I've decided how it should be done. Do it. All I want you to do is just be monkeys. Just make it happen. So what we're doing is we're training them in the same way at all costs, rather than training them to find a better way. And then sixthly, it ruptures the trust between you and your team. So if we keep stepping in to do stuff, it erodes trust between you and your team. Your team don't trust you. They are unsure of your motives. They recognize you lack confidence in them. And they'll do what you tell them to do because they know it's the right thing, particularly if you're paying them. But, you know, there's no love and you're not really leading them any longer. So there you go. Those are six reasons. Comments, queries, questions.
I also think if we are not doing delegation, we're limiting the buy-in that people have to a lot of the things we just spoke about. Oh, I don't really want to really now commit to this training, because what's the use of me really getting trained well in this if I'm not really going to be trusted to do it?
That's really helpful.
I mean, I was doing work with high school students and I would see this on a routine basis. I'm just like, okay, try to delegate something. There's failure. And just even in the failure, sometimes I'd fail to debrief with them, but there was stuff to learn.
I think one thing I've noticed over the years is churches, like more charismatic leaning churches, are much quicker to delegate and take a risk. And that produces some quality control issues, but it also makes it massively hard for people from that kind of background to integrate into a more reformed evangelical church subculture, because they're so used to the idea that they'd be trusted with a lot that they, you know, I just saw that even in student days, like people who come out of having massive responsibility they should never have had as a 16-year-old in their youth group just couldn't hack not being given the response, you know, like they just, there's a kind of arrogance. I guess that's a student level thing maybe, but I think that does sort of carry on, that you know, like Reformed evangelical churches that have run like the kind of army sergeant major with everyone saying, you say jump and I say how high. Yeah, they're just, it's just a really alien culture to people from other church subcultures.
And I think that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because in one sense, where you have the danger is a caricature of charismatic ministry, but where it's, let me caricature a charismatic ministry. And it is a caricature, but if where you have, in one sense, froth, not depth, you can see how bad that is. There, in one sense, there isn't a massive competency issue for us. So in other words, you can give, it's easy to give a non-Bible-centered ministry away because it doesn't rely on a high level of competency of, for example, Bible handling, Bible teaching, Bible training. Whereas, of course, our ministry patterns mean actually we need to be proficient in those things. So you need a bit of training. And where you've got a church model that's built on, you know, a bit more bells and whistles, smoke and lights, you know, you can actually give stuff away. But for us, it matters. Quality control of those things really does matter. So I think we need to factor that in as well. I've probably been a bit unfair, but I think you get my drift on that.
Can I ask your reflections on that? Do you think training would be an obvious thing where you sort of say, great, I'm really keen for you to do this. Let's talk about how we do it. And then you're sort of able to give stuff away, I suppose. But is your experience of that isn't necessarily well received? People feel a bit, undermined by that. Oh, I thought I was doing this perfectly well beforehand. Yeah. Or would you come at it from another angle?
Dave, if I've understood your question correctly, and it's come over a little unclearly, probably because of my internet, I think I've scribbled down here, are we in a sympathetic review culture? In other words, are people at the moment wanting evaluation and feedback? And my gut says they're not, partly because I think I'm aware of that in myself. In other words, I don't like people sitting in judgment over me and my ministry execution. You don't like that. And I suspect others are like me, and probably it's more pronounced now because we're wanting to be affirmed all the time rather than critiqued. And I think the important thing is, one, once it's managing people's expectations, but two, just it is in a context of relationship and love. And where you've got those two things in place, you're better placed to give feedback, aren't you? I mean, it's like raising your kids, isn't it? I mean, if we keep criticizing them, critiquing them, they just end up thinking, Dad doesn't love me. To be surrounded by affirmation, encouragement, support gives us permission then to say, look, you know, the way you speak to your sister, you know, we need to talk about this or whatever. And I think it's probably the same in this. And it is, I mean, so often it's about being proactive and managing people's expectations. But the truth is we need to learn to be good at this, because otherwise we are restricting the size of our engine. And I think Andrew's point is absolutely spot on. I think that's why you get such buy-in on charismatic churches. It's because they feel ownership, because they've been given ownership to make stuff happen. And I wonder whether we don't do that as well as we ought to.
I think my mind is thinking, like, what ways do we, and I mean, you're going to get to how we delegate, but I'm already thinking, what culture of feedback and evaluation do we want? How do we model that so that when we do delegate things, people are growing? You know, that's just kind of where my gears are going. I've had some pastors and they wouldn't give any feedback at all. And I would ask for it and it'd be like, oh, you're doing fine. And I'm like,
Yeah. I was blown away the other day by one of my guys at church who preached. He's the same age as me and as a friend. And I took my time to give him some feedback, scribble it down. And I was thinking, you know, I made some, you know, lots of good stuff. I just, you know, and honestly, he said, I can't thank you for doing this. No one has ever done this to me before. No one's ever taken this much interest in my preaching. And it was just, and I was slightly taken aback by how positive he was. And look, you guys know me well enough to know that there were occasions where I said, you know, I'm not sure. I think you probably spent more time saying what it isn't than explaining what it wasn't, what it's not, rather than what it is. You know, and that's a fairly big critique to say of a sermon. But he was so grateful. Extraordinary. Let me move on and talk about how to delegate. Five very quick things. This comes from a book called The Effective Manager by Mark Horstman. It's a fairly easy read. I imagine you can probably get a TED talk by him where he covers a lot of stuff. One of the really good insights is there's some really good insights on that actually. For Dave, you might be worth reading that, or you can borrow my copy. Just on things like one-to-ones. And one of the things I haven't said is, alongside delegation must go coaching. In one sense, it's unstated here. It's assumed but unstated. But that kind of relationship that Andrew's talking about, a relationship of interest and investment in people, really matters. And you get that with coaching. But we'll say more about that. So look, number one, state your desire for help. Number two, tell them why you're asking them. Number three, ask for specific acceptance. Four, describe the task or project in detail. Address deadline, quality and reporting standards. Let me go back to the start. State your desire for help. In other words, I'd like your help. Not, can you do me a favour? Because this isn't a personal request, it's a work request. Not, I need some help, which implies that they haven't really got a choice, but I'd like your help. It's just an interesting way of framing what you're after. It does, of course, give them the opportunity to decline, which, of course, if they give you a yes, there is their kind of personal ownership for that. But in other words, I'd really like your help. I'm doing this, but I'd like your help. It puts you in a place of vulnerability. If you, as a manager, as someone who's in charge of others, says that to a team, just an interesting dynamic. I think it's a sort of servant-footed dynamic that I think is helpful. Number two, tell them why you're asking them. In other words, I'd really like your help. The reason I'm asking you is you're my best trainer. So in other words, we're saying to them, look, this is the rationale why I'm asking you for help. I've thought about it. I've come to a reasoned conclusion. There is a clear reason why I've come to you. And it's not just, you know, bigging them up, but it is saying, look, I think you're the obvious choice. I'd like your help and you're the obvious person to ask. Now, in terms of choosing what you delegate to whom, how you choose, it's worth asking, what are they good at? What do they like to do? What do they need to do? Look at what they want to do. So in other words, delegate to their strengths, what they're good at. You're good at that. That's a good thing to do. Secondly, look at what they like to do. So delegate to affinity. There's a great quote, which I think is true. When you love something, it tells you all its secrets. Interestingly, I think it's probably true in relationships, but there is something about that, isn't it? You know, it's if you dive into it and you invest in it, if you love it, you just keep going and you unearth everything. I just thought that's a great quote. When you love doing something, it tells you all its secrets. Thirdly, look at what they need to do. In other words, delegate to their developmental needs. In other words, progression. They want to get better at stuff. Here's an opportunity for you to get better at something. Fourthly, look at what they want to do, delegate to their desires, the things that get them excited. So tell them why you're asking them, and those are the kind of things that will shape that decision. Thirdly, ask for specific acceptance, which I think is asking them whether they are willing to take on responsibility for the task or the responsibility before we tell them all the detail of what's involved. So in other words, we don't go through it to the nth degree and say, look, will you do it? We say, look, I'd like your help. You're the obvious person to choose because of this. I'd like you to train our Bible study group leaders. Are you up for it? Now, how they then answer is hugely significant. Because if they say yes, you've got them. If they say no, they'll raise an objection. And then you can say, look, if I deal with that objection, would you still do it? And they may say yes, or they may say no again, in which case you can deal with that objection. But I've not yet covered what all of what's involved, because I want to get to the point where they're prepared to listen to what's involved with an attitude of ownership and a willingness to try to solve the problem. Which, if you get their acceptance, I'm in. Right, now let's listen. Otherwise, what they'll do is they'll listen in a defensive way and they'll worry about the workload and the priorities. But actually, you want them going, no, I'm in. Right, now let's talk about what's involved. Because fourthly, you want to describe the task or the project in detail. And normally, I think the first way you do that is saying, look, this is what it is, and here's what I do. But then also give them the freedom to go away and say, you can do it a different way if you want to. Now, I'll come back and talk about how we handle that. But in other words, let's at least fill them in on what is involved. And then address deadline, quality and reporting standards, which is a way of saying, when does it need to be done by? What's acceptable and what's unacceptable? And kind of... how frequently do you need to bring me up to speed on developments? That's what, you know, reporting standards stands for. Okay. Now, I find this helpful. Six levels of delegation. So in other words, it is worth differentiating between delegation. Not all delegation is the same. At one end, the blue end, is gopher delegation, do as I say. Just do as I say. Just, you know, I'm going to tell you and then you do it. Look into this is a kind of, and then sort of report back to me on what you found. Give me your advice. Go away, look at it, work it out. Give me your advice and then I'll decide. Fourth level, look, explore. Decide and just check with me before you press the go button. Explore and decide within these limits. You're allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that. You can spend over £10,000, you can't spend, you know, or whatever. And then the kind of just take care of it for me. Now, I think whether you use those things, I think what it shows is there's delegation and there's delegation. You just need to make sure that the people you delegate to understand which one of those you're asking. Because if you think you have said, do as I say, and they think you've just asked them to take care of it, you're going to fall out. So you've got to manage that. I think there's, the next diagram shows that, I guess. Yeah. So it's kind of follow these instructions precisely. You investigate, I'll make the decision. You investigate, we'll decide together. You decide, tell me, and then go ahead unless I object. Decide and go ahead, just tell me what happened. Decide and go ahead, it's your responsibility now. Slightly different, but in other words, there's an increasing sense of responsibility for what actually happens. And what we need to try to do is to get towards six with people. I've got a great quote from a guy called Craig Groeschel, who is he's the senior pastor of Life Dot Church in the States. He says this: if you delegate tasks, you'll build followers who only do what they're told. If you delegate authority, you'll build leaders. And it's just drawing again the distinction between, look, decide and go ahead. It's your responsibility now. What have you delegated there? Not a task, but responsibility or authority. And we want to get to the position where we're actually giving away responsibility for stuff. We remain accountable because we're the team leader, but we're not responsible. There's a difference between accountability and responsibility. And what we want to do is give away decisions and give away responsibility for things. And that's growing leaders that remain accountable to us, but that's what we want to try and develop. In terms of some additional reading, there are one or two things I'll probably send you subsequently. There's some stuff from Matt Perman I probably want to push your way. But here you go. Here's a list of stuff I found helpful. So The Effective Manager by Mark Horstman. Where is that? So that's this book here. It's not too thick. And as you can see, it's not hugely complicated. It's got a few diagrams. So like lots of business books, what is it? It's 180 pages. But honestly, I think there's probably there's a morning's reading there, but useful. What's best next? Matt Perman. Lots that's there. On the issue of delegation, there's a little bit, but it's a kind of, Christian's Guide to Productivity. So that's worth looking at. I find the Harvard Business Review articles are helpful. I think you can get 4 free articles every month. I think that's right. Otherwise, you have to subscribe. So, periodically, I'll go in. I stuck delegation in, and the articles that are there. There are 3 articles, I think, on delegation. And then the other book I periodically use is written by a friend called Lead, which I put on there. Greenway, Andy Blacknell is the guy in the middle, and Andy Kuhn. So those are the places that I would look if you wanted to do more on delegation. If you wanted, inevitably, I guess, the one place, I would go Craig Hamilton, and then just chase it. He's got other stuff in addition. I'm trying to work out, did I put it down? I'm not sure I did. But I think the great thing about Hamilton is that what you can do is at the end of each chapter, he has other chapters to read that he recommends that are related. And so you can kind of chase those and work those out. But they're things like, I think if something's worth doing, it's worth doing badly. Just get out of the way of good people. Those will all be related and it'll help you put together what you're trying to do. Okay, right. I think that's all I've got for you. How are we doing? Sorry, we've gone over.
I did want to just ask this question of and I think it's going to be very obvious when in what ways are we looking for the secular ability to delegate and the Christian brother or sister, the Christian brotherly kind of I'm going to bear with you and go forward? Because sometimes I've been there's a balance that I'm looking for and I'm not quite successful at it sometimes.
Yeah. And Andrew, I'm not sure I know the answer. I think I would say I find stewardship a great category to think about. And I do not want to be wasteful of human resources or gospel opportunities. And I think you're right. We want to be instinctively patient, but not endlessly so. And so there may be occasions where we need to say to someone, look, I'm not sure this is making the best use of your skills. And I think those are difficult conversations to have. But I think if they're driven by love, concern, and in one sense, a desire to we want people, we want them in their sweet spot. I think I've given other diagrams previously, haven't I, where there's, if you can find the sweet spot where people are good at what they do, they love what they do, and the world needs it, you kind of, ooh, hang on a second, You know, I think we found a vocation there. But I don't think we can do, I don't think we can be endlessly patient with people who are underperforming, not least because what they're doing will affect others as well as affect the gospel ministry.
Yeah.
But practically, it's worth finding, if you're going to move them out of something, move them to something. Mm-hmm. I remember in the early days of Dundonald, Richard Cokin gave to one particular chap the responsibility of the Lord's Supper. You know, he had to bring the bread and the wine, and it was there with all the with the cups and the da da da, and the cups were never completely clean, and you know, and it, you know, it wasn't quite, but you just thought, do you know what, this is great, that guy's got a job, he's contributing, he takes it seriously, and I'm not sure there are many other things that he could do at this stage of where we're at, but he can do that, and we love the fact that he's doing it, and we'll all cope with the fact he's not doing it brilliantly. And if anyone complained, you know, you just a quiet word to explain why it was valuable to have their contribution.
Yeah, no, that's really, that's good. That's helpful.
Right. I think we need to go. You guys need to go. Let me pray. Father, on this matter of delegation, I want to thank you, first of all, that you give us human resources, people with whom we can work. They're not the means of us getting our stuff done. They're people with whom we work. We love working together. We have different responsibilities, and our job is to help them get the best out of them, and therefore help make us servant leaders, not exploitative leaders who see others as the means to doing our work. Help us to continue to think about these things, particularly from a Christian perspective, to learn from the best secular wisdom, but in particular to grow our ministry engines where we are. Give us increasing competence and training and coaching so that we have confidence in giving away both tasks and responsibilities so that you might grow the work. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.